The Outlaws and the Missionary. It was Mrs. Monks, the vicar's wife, who insisted on holding a missionary meeting for children the day after she'd held a similar missionary meeting for grown-ups. She was a woman whose zeal sometimes outran her discretion. And so it was that William and his faithful outlaws, all brushed and scoured, made their way to swell the ranks of Mrs. Monks's juvenile missionary meeting at the vicarage. "Waste of an afternoon," grumbled William moodily.
"There'll be tea anyway," said Ginger, trying to look on the bright side.
"Yes, what they left yesterday," said William. "And it'll all be stale and not enough, and she'll not give us any more. I know her. The last eaten-up tea I came to of hers, I only got one piece of bread and butter, and it was as hard as nails and all curled up. And listening to a dull old lecture all the time," said Douglas.
But the gloomy forebodings of the outlaws were not justified. The tea was ample, and the missionary even inspiring. What's more, he stirred the children's competitive instinct. He ended his speech by saying, "You must each try to collect 2 shillings, but you mustn't stop at 2 shillings, you know. Let's see which of all you boys and girls can bring me the most money to our next meeting in 2 weeks' time." And at once, the outlaws felt that their honour demanded that they should beat all the other competitors and bring the largest amount of money to the next meeting. They went straight to the old barn to discuss the matter. William was the only one of them who had any money at all at present, and he had 4p. But he lost no time in informing them that his 4p wasn't eligible as the nucleus of their new fund.
"I'd saved it for a new pistol," he explained. "One like Victor Jameson's got. The man had sold the last one, but he said he was having some more in. I'd have spent it last Saturday if he'd had a pistol in the shop, so I count it as spent already, 'cause it's only waiting till they come in."
The outlaws admitted the justice of this.
"We'll find some way of making money that we've never tried before," said Ginger.
Their previous attempts at money-making had indeed been numerous, but not strikingly successful.
"I don't think there is any way of making money that we've not tried," said William.
"My aunt was reading a story to me last Sunday," said Henry. "I wasn't listening, but I couldn't help hearing bits now and then, and it was about a girl that wanted some money, and she sold her hair."
"Her what?"
said William, incredulously.
"Her hair."
"Who to?"
"A hairdresser."
"Well," said William, amazed, "I never heard of anyone doing that before. How much did he give for it?"
"£5," said Henry.
"Crumbs!"
"Well, it must be true, if it's in a book," said Henry.
"Well, it's a jolly easy way of getting money, if it's true," said William. "Let's go and try it. I say, 4 fives are 20. What if he gives us £20?
"We've come to sell you our hair," announced William to Mr. Theobald, the village barber, a few minutes later.
"Eh?"
said Mr. Theobald.
"We'll sell you our hair, £5 the lot," said William generously. "The ordinary price is £5 each, but we don't want to be mean, so we'll sell it at £5 the lot."
Mr. Theobald threw back his bald head and roared with laughter. He went into his little saloon and told it to his customers. He went to his front door and proclaimed it to the village street. Loud laughter followed the outlaws out of the shop. Loud laughter followed them down the street. They marched on, their faces flaming angrily. In the old barn, they sat down and considered this new complication. They didn't take kindly to being butts for ridicule, and the problem of wiping out this insult now filled their whole mental horizon.
"All your aunt's fault," said William moodily to Henry, "reading you stories that weren't true. Now everyone will be laughing at us."
"Well, what are we going to do?" said Ginger. "We've got to do something to make people laugh at him," muttered Henry.
William thought of Mr. Theobald, saw him in his mind's eye as he stood every morning in his shop doorway, the sun shining on his perfectly hairless head, beneath his sign, "Theobald, Hairdresser." The next morning, the men who hurried down the village street towards the station went shaking and guffawing on their way. For Mr. Theobald stood in his doorway, as usual, the sun shining on his bald head. But William and the outlaws had come after dark with a ladder and a pot of black paint and obliterated one letter. The sign above his head now read, instead of Theobald,
The bald hairdresser. It was not till almost lunchtime that Mr. Theobald realized that the laughter that still resounded through the village was connected in any way with himself. That little affair settled, the outlaws turned their attention again to the matter of money for the missionaries. They discussed every method of making money they could think of, and dismissed each as impossible. Until a few days later, Ginger found the solution in a magazine of his mother's. "Look," he said eagerly, "it tells you how to make ginger beer, and it sounds quite easy. And everyone likes ginger beer. I bet if we make ginger beer and sell it, we get a lot of money." The outlaws took up the idea with enthusiasm. It was decided that Ginger should get the yeast from his home, Henry the sugar, Douglas the ginger, and William the lemon. "And we'll start collecting bottles at once," said William. "I bet we ought to make enough to conquer all the savages in the world." Despite the eloquence of the missionary, the outlaws were still somewhat vague as to his exact aims. A motley crew of bottles was assembled in the old barn, and the outlaws viewed them with pride as they began the production process. "I'm putting a lot of yeast in," said Ginger, "because that's what makes it fizzy." It was a proud moment for the outlaws when they stood by the roadside, their strange assortment of bottles displayed with a notice, "Ginger beer, tuppence a bottle, made by us." There was no lack of customers, and the bottles of ginger beer had all gone in less than an hour. The outlaws were already manufacturing another supply in the old barn when a crowd of enraged customers ran them to earth, demanding their money back. It appeared that all the bottles had exploded either on the way home or as soon as they reached home. One customer had been hit in the eye by a cork. Another had had her best dress ruined. The cat of another had been so terrified by the report that it had shot out of the house like an arrow from a bow, and so far all search for it had proved fruitless. Had the customers come back alone, the outlaws might possibly have been a match for them. But they didn't. They brought indignant parents in their train. The parents whose vases and light bulbs had been broken and whose babies had been drenched in ginger beer. The parents did not merely demand the money back, they extracted it violently from the outlaws' pockets, telling them many forcible home truths in the process. When they'd gone, the outlaws sat and looked at each other blankly. "Huh," said William bitterly. "Talk about savages." Henry turned his sorrowful gaze to the new supply that stood in the corner of the old barn.
"What are we going to do with that?" he said.
"Tell you what," said Douglas, "let's try my aunt. I bet she doesn't like ginger beer, but she's jolly keen on missionaries and savages and things like that. She's gone away today, but she'll be back tomorrow afternoon."
Tomorrow afternoon was the afternoon of the next missionary meeting, and the outlaws felt that it was running it rather close. But their usual optimism upheld them, and they set off hopefully to Douglas's aunt's house with a wheelbarrow full of bottles. Douglas's aunt disliked boys and was on far from friendly terms with Douglas, but she was, as Douglas had said, keen on missionaries and savages and things like that, and she was deeply touched by their errand.
"I think it's splendid of you boys," she said, "and I do hope it means that your conduct's going to be completely different in the future."
She opened her purse and gave William 3 half-crowns.
"I don't really want the mixture, of course, so you better put it in the greenhouse to be out of the way."
They put the bottles in the greenhouse and went quickly away. A muffled report, followed by the sound of breaking glass, reached them as they shut the gate.
7 and 6, said William blissfully, when they'd reached a safe distance. "I bet no one will have more than that."
Victor Jameson passed on the other side of the street.
"Hi," called William. "How much you got for the savages?"
7 and 6, called Victor proudly. "And I bet you've not got more than that."
"Oh, haven't we?" returned William.
But the faces of the outlaws had fallen. They waited till Victor was out of earshot. Then Ginger said,
"Well, we won't have the most after all."
At that moment, another group of boys passed. They too had been at the missionary meeting.
"How much you got?" shouted William.
5 shillings, shouted one of the boys proudly.
"Well, where are you going now?" said William. "It's not time for the meeting yet, is it?"
"No, there's a fair in Jenks's Meadow. Didn't you know?"
"Come on," said William to the outlaws. "There's just time to go round it before the meeting begins."
It was only a little fair,
but the outlaws wandered round it with great enjoyment. One item interested them especially. It was called the Stock Exchange Machine. You put a penny in the slot, and the pointer whirled round the dial. If it stopped at the name of certain commodities, your penny was returned, with another. If it stopped at the name of others, nothing happened. They watched a man put in a penny. The finger moved round to coal, and tuppence came back through the slot. William's eyes gleamed.
"I say," he said.
He took one of the half-crowns out of his pocket. "Well, the first thing is to change this into pennies." The children streamed into the vicarage under the direction of Mrs. Monks. The vicar's wife was a good woman, but she was not good with children, and it was the outlaws, of course, that she dreaded most. At last they came, and as she saw them, her heart lightened. It was quite evident that they were not in an obstreperous mood. They entered moodily, gloomily, their brows set, their eyes fixed on the floor. They had no musical instruments with them with which to beguile the monotony of the meeting. They did not even scuffle. The missionary entered, smiling and debonair. "All right, children," he said. "I'll ask you in turn how much each of you have got for the cause. Now," he began with Victor Jameson, "how much have you got?" Victor Jameson proudly said, 7 and 6 pence. And after a few words of commendation, the missionary moved on to the next. It was at this point that William began to burrow in his pocket and to realise for the first time that he had not only lost all Douglas's aunt's money on the stock exchange machine, but also his own precious fourpence. The missionary had reached him now. "And now, my little man," he said, "you were collecting in a group of four, weren't you? How much have you got?" William fixed a stern eye upon the missionary. "Nothing. And you owe us fourpence," he said.
What?
"You owe us fourpence. We tried to get a lot of money for you, but we've lost fourpence of our own on it. So you owe us fourpence."
"I don't know what you mean," said the missionary.
The vicar's wife rose from her seat, and the outlaws were ignominiously ejected, William still loudly protesting that the missionary owed them fourpence. Outside the vicarage gate, William gazed at his outlaws indignantly. "Well, that's the last thing I ever do for missionaries. If they don't pay their debts, they can't expect people to help them." The other outlaws agreed, and the four of them walked gloomily down the village street. They had avoided the village street since their encounter with Mr. Theobald, but they'd forgotten that in this last blow of fate. "I can't even get that pistol now," grumbled William. "And I don't know if I'll ever have another fourpence. I don't wonder savages eat them." By them, he was referring not to pistols or fourpences, but to missionaries. "It's the same as stealing, not paying debts," he went on fiercely. They glanced across the street. Mr. Theobald stood in his doorway. Just over his head, the O of Theobald, startlingly new and golden, flashed in the sun. Mr. Theobald looked at the outlaws. He'd been feeling slightly depressed and rheumatic-y, but the sight of the outlaws cheered him. He'd completely forgotten the trick that had been played on his sign, but he remembered the outlaws' offer to sell him their hair for £5, and he burst into peals of laughter, remembering it. The outlaws looked at him. They had completely forgotten their offer to sell him their hair, but they remembered the glorious trick they had played on him. Their laughter answered his across the village street.